Tonight is the Yahrzeit of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Chof Hei Shvat Tof Resh Mem Gimel, which is 137 years ago. And it was pointed out by the Talmidim of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter that nothing is, of course, a coincidence. And if he passed away during these days, Pashas Mishvotim, then it's definitely not coincidental that there is a big principle, fundamental yisod, which is really the theme of this week's parasha, which very much mirrors Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's life and his legacy. And that is, if we were to try and sum up in one line what was Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's legacy, then we would say that he was the one really who put Bein Odom L'Chaveroi, as it were, back on the map and taught us the significance, the centrality of Bein Odom L'Chaveroi in our Avodas Hashem. Because sometimes that's considered perhaps of lesser importance. We all understand that we have to daven and we have to put on tefillin and we must keep Shabbos. But when it comes to our relationship with our fellow man, that's perhaps sometimes viewed upon as less significant, perhaps not so important, less central to our Avodas Hashem. Parashas Mishpatim, if you look through the very long list of mitzvahs that are recorded in the Torah in Parashas Mishpatim, you will see that most of them are the halachas that pertain to Bein Odom L'Chaveroi, a person and his relationship with his fellow man. And that's what the Talmidim of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter pointed out, that it's no coincidence that Rabbi Yisrael himself, who personified and taught about the significance of Bein Odom L'Chaveroi, passes away in Parshas Mishpatim, which deals predominantly, not exclusively, but predominantly with the halachas of Bein Odom L'Chaveroi. That's what the Talmidim pointed out. We'll mention one or two stories perhaps in a moment on Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's life and his teachings, particularly in this area of Bein Odom L'Chaveroi. But I'd just like to draw your attention to the end of this week's parasha. We know that the story of Matan Torah, which was discussed last week, is discussed in the parasha this week as well. And there's many important principles to be learned and many halachic principles that are to be learned as well. So the Torah writes as follows: Vayikach Moshe Chatzi Hadom. They slaughtered korbanos, and Moshe Rabbeinu took half of the blood. Vayosem bo'agonos. What does it mean, bo'agonos? And he put them in cups or bowls. Vachatzi hadam zorak al hamizbeach. So half of the blood was placed in the bowls, and half of the blood was sprinkled upon the mizbeach. Now, what was done with that half of the blood that was put in the bowls? So Rashi says, Lahazois oisom al ha'om. To sprinkle on the people. So half of the dam was sprinkled on the people, and half of the dam was sprinkled upon the Mizbeach. So it's been pointed out that this is what we were being taught right from the outset at Matan Torah. So there has to be equality between the Am, which of course represents Bein Odom L'Chaveroi, and the Mizbeach, which of course represents Bein Odom L'Mokin. And that's why the dam was split into two. Not only that, in the very next pasuk it says, Vayikach Sefer HaBris. Torah is called the Bris, and Klal Yisrael said, Naaseh V'Nishma. This Bris, this covenant that we forged, between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the basis of the covenant was the understanding there must be two halves, Bein Adam L'Chaveiroi and Bein Adam L'Mokin, and you cannot have one without the other. And that's why half of the dam was sprinkled on the nation, Bein Adam L'Chaveiroi, and half of the dam was sprinkled on the Mizbeach, that represents Bein Adam L'Mokin. A person's relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and a person's relationship with his fellow man. Those are the two halves. Now it's very interesting. Rashi says that when they split the blood into two, Rashi says, Mi chilkoi? Who divided up the dam? Rashi says, Malach bov chilkoi. An heavenly angel came and split the blood into two. Now, why was it necessary for a heavenly angel to split the blood into two? So it's been pointed out that this is the point. It's only a heavenly angel who will be able accurately and perfectly to split the dam into two. But anybody else, it might be 51% versus 49%. And then you wouldn't have the equality anymore of Bein Adam L'Chaveiroi and Bein Adam L'Mokin. So it was crucial that a malach had to come along and split the blood so that it would be exactly chetzi, chetzi. Exactly half-half, so as to emphasize this point that Bein Adam L'Mokin is chetzi. Bein Adam L'Chaveiroi is chetzi. Which one is the bigger half? No such thing. And when we break the matzah, yachatz, and say the night, and we ask our kids, which is the bigger half? That's an anomaly. If it's bigger, then it can't be a half. What we really mean is the bigger piece. But when we come to the dam over here, which was split into two, it was absolutely split into two, 50-50. Which human being is capable of doing that? And the answer is nobody. And that's why it was necessary for a malach to come, split the dam, half goes on the am, Bein Adam L'Chaveiroi, and half goes on the mizbeach, Bein Adam L'Mokin. That's the yesod over here. So as we mentioned, this is what the Talmidim of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter pointed out. That Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, he was one who was responsible for, as it were, putting Bein Adam L'Chaveiroi back on the map. But not only putting it back on the map, not only stressing the importance of it, but stressing also the centrality and how that you cannot actually have one without the other. He was the one really who personified this understanding that you have to have chetzi, chetzi. It's not just that you can't have one without the other, but rather the two are of equal importance. The two are of equal importance. And that's why his disciples pointed out that it's surely therefore not coincidental that he passed away in this parasha. Not only does this parasha deal predominantly with the laws of Bein Adam L'Chaveiroi, but in addition to that, this is the parasha which tells us all about the bris, all about the covenant which we forged with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it was all about Chatzi Chatzi, Bein Adam L'Mokin, Bein Adam L'Chaveiroi. Now, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter every year used to go baking matzahs ahead of Pesach. And on one particular occasion, he was unable to go, if I'm not mistaken, for health reasons. So he asked his Talmidim, could they please go to the matzah baking factory and bake matzahs on his behalf, of course, adhering to all his stringencies and chumras and dikdukim. So the Talmidim came to the Rebbe and they said to him, Rebbe, we think that we're pretty much aware of how you bake matzahs and those things that you're particular on. Is there anything you'd like to point out? Is there any extra special hidur? Is there any special hidur with regard to baking matzahs that you'd like to draw to our attention? Rabbi Yisrael said, I'm so glad you asked, because yes, there is. A very important hidur in the matzahs. You know what that hidur was? He told them that in this factory, Besides for the people, the men baking factory, there's also a number of women working there as well. And in particular, there's one widow, there's an almona there. And he said, for me, my hiddur in matzahs is, make sure he instructed them, don't be mitzayir her in any way. Don't cause her distress. Don't rush. Don't hurry her. Don't tell her that she's not working fast enough, because that will cause chas v'sholom, some hurt, some bad feelings on her part. And the Torah says you mustn't chas v'sholom cause any bad feelings from almona. So what was he teaching his talmidim then? He was teaching his talmidim that matzahs, which we view as a mitzvah, obviously as being not an amokim, if you want to make sure that your matzah is really muhudar, make sure it's accompanied by Bein Adam Lechaveiro as well. And that is, that the people involved don't chas v'sholom get trodden on along the way. That's the chatzi that Rabbi Yisrael taught us. Now, I just read last night, absolutely fascinating. On Erev Yom Kippur, can you imagine? Erev Yom Kippur, the busiest day of the year, ahead of the most important day of the year, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was seen going into his kitchen and taking what looked like a hammer or an axe and hiding under his coat. Why would he need a hammer on Erev Yom Kippur? So they went to check what's he doing, and they followed him, unbeknownst to him, and they saw that he was going, strangely enough, with his hammer, nowhere else but shul. Even more strange. What do you need a hammer for in shul on Erev Yom Kippur? And they had a look, and they saw Rabbi Yisrael Salanter went round to all the benches and all the chairs in the Beis HaMedrash, turned them over and banged in the nails and made sure that they were properly sturdy for people ahead of Yom Kippur. And when he finished that, he went up to the Ezras Noshim, where the women were going to sit, and he knocked in the nails there and made sure that the tables were sturdy there as well. Again, a profound lesson in how to prepare for Yom Kippur. If you're going to prepare for Yom Kippur, the holiest day of the year, you have to make sure your Bein Adam Lechaveiro is in check as well. He didn't go to bang in the nails of his own chair and of his own shtender and his own bench, but rather those of his fellow mispalalim. That's Bein Adam Lechaveiro. That was really his legacy. Which reminds me, by the way, just as an aside, on one occasion the story is told that the shul in Preshborg, where the Chassam Sofer was the role, they were waiting to begin the davening, Yom Kippur night, Kol Nidre, and the Chassam Sofer hadn't arrived in shul, and they couldn't understand why. And eventually he turned up late and he said, I'm so sorry I was late. I had some last minute preparations to do ahead of Yom Kippur. Did you know what those preparations were? He says, I was just busy, I was involved in arranging a shidduch for an orphan, a yeshiva. He said, I wanted to come into Yom Kippur with the last minute zechus ahead of Yom Kippur. Now, we know that on Har Sinai, after the chetzi, the dam was indeed split into two, Klal Yisrael were given the luchos on which it was written, the Aseres HaDibros. And there is a very strange thing about the luchos, which is written a couple of times in the Torah, where it says in Parshas Vayeschanan, for example, the Aseres HaDvarim, which is the Aseres HaDibros, Vayichtevei, when they were written, Al Shtei Luchos Avonim. It's written once over there in Parshas Vayeschanan, and then also in Parshas Ekev, Tes Yud Aleph. Here it's written as Shnei Luchos Avonim. But the strange thing is, do you know how Luchos is spelled? Lamed Ches Sof, without the vav. Which, if you don't have, therefore, the Nikud punctuation, you could easily read it as Luchas, which means the singular. So what is it? Was it two luchais or was it one luchais in the singular? And the answer is yes, all of the above. Because we know that the luchais were made up of two halves. The first five were Ben Adam Lemokim. The second five were Ben Adam Lechaveiroi. So, of course, essentially they were two separate luchais. However, they were stuck together and they became one. It's not just two halves of a whole, but rather this is the lesson that we've been taught in our parasha as well. The Chetzi Chetzi. The Ben Adam Lechaveiroi and Ben Adam Lemokim is luchas. It's as if it was in a singular, single tense, because really it's all one. Now I'll show you a fascinating thing. In Parshas Kisisa, after the terrible events of the Egel, Moshe Rabbeinu descends and he smashes the luchas. And it says there, Vayashlech miyodav es haluchas. How do you spell the word miyodov? So the way it's written in the Torah is mem yud dalet vov, which is miyodoi, from his hand. But the way it's pronounced is miyodov, plural, which means his hands, plural. So is it the singular miyodoi or miyodov or the plural? So the Mepharshim point out that this was precisely the point. Moshe Rabbeinu was holding the luchos with both hands. Why both hands? As we said, there's two halves. They're not on the mokim, they're not on the chavir. Now, when he saw that Klal Yisrael was serving the eagle, which half of the Aseres Adibros would you say was being compromised? The Bein Adam Lemokim or Bein Adam Lechaveiro? Obviously, the Bein Adam Lemokim, it's very bizarre. Adonichi Hashem Aleichem, Lo Yeh Lecha Eloheim Achir. Therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu, as it were, initially thought that if I'm going to smash the luchos, which part am I going to smash? Miyodoi, just from one hand, the Bein Adam Lemokim. Because that's the side that they haven't kept. But eventually what happened, the miyodoi became miyodov. Miyodov, i.e. it became plural. Why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu was teaching us that you cannot have one without the other. If you compromise on one, then you've necessarily compromised on the other and you're left with nothing. And you know where else you see this? In Parshas Chayei Sarah. After the whole events of Rivka and the chesed that she performed for Eliezer, so he gave her a gift. And what was that gift? In Perek Chof Dalet, Pasuk Chof Beis, it says that he gave her Shnei Tzmidim Al Yodeha. What's Shnei Tzmidim? Two bracelets. So Rashi says there, Shnei Tzmidim Remez, this is a hint, L'shnei Luchos. This is a remez to the two Luchos. Why is the two bracelets a remez to the two Luchos? So Rashi adds one more word. Because the Luchos were Metsumodos. Metsumodos means stuck to each other. Which is very similar to the word Smidim. Now what's going on over here? Is this a play on words? Smidim, Metsumodos. The answer is Rivka had just displayed to Eliezer which side of the luchos, Bein Adam Lechaveiro. She'd shown that she was a tremendous Baalas Chesed. So what does Eliezer need to teach her? But it has to be Metsumodos. It has to be stuck to Bein Adam Lemokim. There cannot be one without the other. And even though you've passed the test with flying colors in the area of Bein Adam Lechaveiroi, that's the lesson of the luchos. Luchas, really it's all one. Miyodoi, miyodov, it's really all one. And if it's all one, then it doesn't suffice to excel in Bein Adam Lechaveiroi, one has to excel also in Bein Adam Lemokim. There's one other place that we could perhaps point to. Yaakov is grappling with the Malach, the Soresh al Esav, and dislocates his Gid HaNosha, and as a result of which we don't eat the Gid HaNosha. Now, which side must we not eat? So the Mishnah tells us in Chulin that Rabbi Yehuda says it's only the right hand side Gid HaNosha that's forbidden to be eaten. The Chachamim disagree and they say that no, it's true he dislodged one, but both became displaced as a result. Both the right and the left, and therefore, halacha l'maisa, we do not eat the Gid HaNosha of the animal, both right and left. So there's a safer call, the Be'er Yosef. And Be'er Yosef explains, the Malach is trying to overcome Yaakov Avinu, and he sees that he is unsuccessful. So he wants to knock out the Yerech. The Yerech represents the future generations, like Yitzhak Yerech Yaakov. So he knocks out the right-hand side. The right-hand side is, of course, corresponding to Ben Adam Lamokim. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, if that's the Gid HaNosha that he dislocated, that's the one that's also to eat. But says Rabbanon, no! Because if you knock out the right, then you're left with nothing at all. If you don't have a yamin, then you don't have a smoil. You don't have a left-hand side either. Because as we said, you cannot have bin odom lemokim without bin odom lechaveiroi, and you cannot have bin odom lechaveiroi without bin odom lemokim either. We all know the story. The guy comes to Shammai and he says, I'd like to convert. Can you teach me all of Torah on one leg? And he throws him out. But he still understood, I can teach you on one leg. But what was he trying to really teach him? What was he trying to request? I only want one side of the Torah. I only want one leg. Says Hillel HaZokin to him, whatever you would not be, whatever you would not want done to you, don't do unto others either. Zeh klal gadol b'Torah. After the rest of the Mishnah. If your Ben Adam Lechaveiroi is in place, then you can have Ben Adam Lemokim as well. But if you don't, then you can't. So the question is, and this we'll have to finish, maybe we'll just mention one or two beautiful stories at the end. Why indeed is this the case? Why is it, of course, Ben Adam Lemokim is important, Ben Adam Lechaveiroi is important, but why is it that one without the other is worth nothing? So you could say, simply because it's very important to be Mekabel Torah, B'Shleimus. What does it mean, B'Shleimus? Perfection. Just like nobody would say, I'd buy a car, and the person would say, fine, I'll just give you the back half, not the front half. Well, that's useless. So to a Torah, you have to have the right and the left, Ben Adam Lemokim, Ben Adam Lechaveir. But the truth of the matter is, you know, when the Chofetz Chaim passed away, so his great Talmud, Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, said a Hesped. And he said that my Rebbe, the Chofetz Chaim, is an Adam Gadol. What does that mean, an Adam Gadol? He said, imagine you'd see a giant who's got, you know, he's 30 foot tall, very long legs, long arms, everything is super enormous size, except for his fingers. His fingers are average size. What would you say about that person? You'd say he's deformed. You wouldn't say he's an enormous person. It just happens to be his fingers are small. No, he's deformed. Because if you're really a godoil, then you have to be a godoil in all areas. So he said about his rabbi, the Chofetz Chaim, the reason why he could be considered a godoil, an olam godoil, was because he excelled in all areas. He wasn't just tall, but had short fingers. He had long fingers as well. He excelled in all areas of Avodas Hashem. You cannot have one without the other. So the truth is, it could be that there's a deep, very important message to be learned over here. Do you know why you cannot have one without the other? And the answer is, if you don't have Ben Adam Lechaveiroi, then you won't either have Ben Adam Lemokim. Somebody who doesn't engage in Ben Adam Lechaveiroi means he doesn't look anywhere outside of himself. He's subservient to himself. The Anoichi, the Ani. It's all about me. If that's the case, he's certainly not going to be subservient to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is the ultimate force. So Bein Adam L'Chaveiroi, therefore, is really the stepping stone to Bein Adam L'Mochir. When a person excels in Bein Adam L'Chaveiroi, he's exceeded in de-emphasizing, as it were, the centrality of himself. It's not all about me. I'm not just living a life of life, liberty, and a pursuit of happiness. No, that's not what it's all about. Rather, how can I help others? I allow other people to exist in my world. Once I've broken that barrier, then obviously the next obvious step is I can allow HaKadosh Baruch Hu into my world. But if I refuse to allow any person, anyone into my world, because my world is just me, myself, and I, those are the only people who exist in my world, then I'm surely not able to look further beyond and allow HaKadosh Baruch Hu into my world. So it's not simply an union of shleimus, of being Godel in all areas. Actually, you cannot step to stage two without first going through stage one. And the more a person is involved in the Adam L'Chaveiroi, allowing others to take their place in his life, then the more he can include HaKadosh Baruch Hu in his life as well. And that's why all Gedolei Yisrael, without exception, whenever you read, next time you read the biography of a Godel B'Yisrael, you will not only read chapters about his tremendous heights in Torah and his tremendous hasmoda and his dikduk bahalocha, etc. There will always be the inevitable chapters about his Bein Adam L'Chaveiroi, because you cannot have one without the other. You know, the story is told about Rabbi Akiva Eiger. When Rabbi Akiva Eiger got engaged, can you imagine the reputation of this Bocha, Rabbi Akiva Eiger? All of Europe knew about this Bocha. And he came for the first time to the shul where his prospective father-in-law davened as a Bocha. And they were mechabedim to give a drosha. All the Beis HaMedrash was packed. Why would you not want to hear a shir from Rabbi Akiva Eiger? The place was packed. Everybody was waiting with bated breath. And Rabbi Akiva Eiger got up and he said a drosha, and it was very simple. Nothing special. Nothing too glamorous. Nice question, little answer, proof. Nobody wanted to say anything to the father-in-law. He was rather let down. He was convinced, he'd heard that he's just chosen the best son-in-law in Europe. Nobody obviously approached Rabbi Akiva Eiger himself to say to him, that wasn't exactly top draw Josh. It was nice, nothing wrong with it, but nothing special. A few weeks later, Rabbi Akiva Eiger was back in town again, and they were mechabedim once again to give a drosha. And then he gave a drosha of Rabbi Akiva Eiger. Blew them away with his yediyos in the Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos, Rishonim, Shulchan Aruch, Poskim. They saw that he knew everything. And as you can imagine, the father-in-law is beaming from ear to ear with pride as his new son-in-law about to marry his daughter, with of course the question being, why didn't he do that first time round? And somebody asked him the question, Rabbi Akiva Eiger, we knew you were capable of this. We knew you had the potential to give a drosha of incredible standards, which indeed you did, second time round. So what happened first time round? And he said, I'll tell you the truth. First time, obviously, I wanted to prepare a good drosha and give my father-in-law nachas. But I heard and I learned that in one of the other shuls in town here, there was another father-in-law whose daughter also got engaged to a bocha whom I know who has nothing special. Not so spectacular, and they were mechabed him to speak in that shul. So I knew that that would be the talk of town. They were the two droshes of the two new sons-in-law in town, the new kids on the block. And I knew everybody would be comparing, and I knew that, can you imagine what this other father-in-law would feel like? If everybody would say, Yeah, it was a good drasha, but nothing compared. Yeah, you should have seen the other one. Ah, you ain't seen nothing. So maybe I toned it down and I gave a simple drasha. When I came second time around, the other chasam wasn't in town. So nobody was comparing and nobody was contrasting. So then I did my best. And then I really did my best. There's so many stories like this where you see the sensitivity that Gedolei Yisrael had. You know, Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, as we know, lived in Yerushalayim, in the Shaarei Chesed neighborhood, and was very, very makbid. Was very, very makbid. If ever he had to go to a simcha, either out of town, far away, never to be out of town overnight. He always came back, wanted to sleep in Yerushalayim, that's where he wanted to be overnight. Except on one occasion. On one occasion, his nephew got married in Tel Aviv. So Zalman Auerbach obviously went to Tel Aviv, and strangely enough, he stayed overnight, unheard of. Years later, this nephew became a Rav, competent Poisek in his own right, and he was asked on one occasion to Mustada Kiddushin in a certain difficult set of circumstances. So he calls up his uncle, Shlomo Zalman, and says, is there any instructions I should be aware of? And he says, yes. Told him the laws of being Mustada Kiddushin, and then he says, if I understand correctly, you're being Mustada Kiddushin for an orphan. He said, yes, I am. He said, well, don't forget, therefore, what I did for your chasna. What did you do for my chasna? Don't you remember, he said, I came to be Masada Kedushin for your chuppah and I stayed overnight in Tel Aviv because you too were an orphan. He said, yeah, I do remember. You know why Shlomo Zalman Auerbach stayed overnight? He stayed overnight for the following reason. It was the custom at weddings for wedding presents to be given, to be delivered at the chasna. And it was always a opening the gift ceremony following the chasna. Amidst great excitement, can you imagine undoing the wrapping, opening it all up? Ah, it's a set of cutlery, a set of glasses, something for the house. And it's a whole ceremony, which was traditionally done with the parents of the chasna, the parents of the kala. And Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said, I knew that you were an orphan, and therefore you wouldn't be able to share that with anybody. You'd have to go home with your kala and open the presents by yourself, and I'm sure you'd be excited, but it just wouldn't be the same. And that's why I stayed overnight, to be with you even at that late hour when you open the gifts. Imagine a God will be strong, but got nothing better to do than to open up boxes of frying pans and cutlery. Why? Because he was sensitive to the needs of his nephew. And when decades later his nephew said, what should I do? He said, you do the same as well. That's a God will be strong. Rav Avadia Yosef, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, once had to undergo life-saving surgery. And he requested for the operation, when it was scheduled, to be pushed off for 3 hours. This is an emergency, pikuach nefesh. And he said, I'm just in the middle of writing a tshuva. There's a certain woman whose husband has disappeared without trace, which means that she finds herself in the classic tragic circumstance of an aguna, in which the gedolei apoiskim, they try their absolute best to find a heter for her to get married. He said, I'm just in the middle of writing a tshuva in order to permit this woman to get married. I don't want to now go ahead with surgery because I'm worried I might not survive. And if I don't survive the surgery, then this woman will be stranded forever. Therefore, he pushed off the surgery in order to make sure that this woman would get the tshuva and be able to remarry and reset up her life. So that's the common denominator between Gedolei Yisrael. The chatzi chatzi, the dam on the mizbeach and the dam on the am, the two halves of the luchais, which the malach, which Moshe Rabbeinu delivered to Klal Yisrael, metzumoda, is stuck to each other, b'inodom l'chaveri, b'inodom l'mokim. The luchais spelt as a singular or plural form, the answer is it's all the same, because you cannot have one without the other. And that's why we've always seen that our Gedolei Yisrael didn't just excel in b'inodom l'mokim, were not just superlative learners of Torah and daveners, which obviously they were, but they excelled equally in the Inod and the Chaveiroi. As we began, that really is the great legacy of Rabbi Shmuel Salanter. Rabbi Shmuel Salanter, who passed away this week, tonight is his yahrzeit, that was his, really his legacy. Putting Bein Olam L'Chaveiroi not just on the map, but on a level playing field with Bein Olam L'Malkim.